Hi, everybody. I'm Nicole LeBlanc, Director of Markets and Tariff. We started live or streaming a little later than 9. We're having a couple little issues on our end. Not as smooth as the last time we did this, but we'll look to work through those and continue with the session. But if we hit any major glitches, we may have to pause. So I'm just going to give a few introductory remarks and then turn it over to our presenters today. We're excited to share with you the next stage of the sub-hourly settlement evaluations that we've been doing and talk through the options that we think are out there, the options that are available and the trade-offs across them. Maybe starting with the obvious, a lot has changed since we held our first sub-hourly settlement in session in February. Hope everyone is doing as well as can be expected, given everything that's happening in the world and in Alberta these days. I do want to highlight that ISO is very much focused at this point on... Oh, I got a bit of feedback. Focus very much. Oh, it's very much on maintaining the first priority is really maintaining the safety and well-being of our staff and stakeholders, and then ensuring that we're maintaining a reliable grid and market operations as we operate through the COVID pandemic. And with that being our key focus, we kind of first few weeks of working from home, that's where the ISO leadership and management was very much focused. But then once kind of all those aspects were managed and in place, we did turn our minds to how do we continue to be progressing some of the base business that we had originally intended to take forward. And so that is part of the session here today, is that continued progress on some of the initiatives that we had previously identified that we still think are important and maybe just not urgent at this time. So we are continuing to go forward with a number of the market initiatives that we had identified, and looking to do that in a way that is effective, effective for the ISO, effective for stakeholders, effective in the way that we can maintain progress, gather information and gather input as we need it, but not create unnecessary criticality or concern or uncertainty for participants. So we're kind of taking a measured pace, evaluating, talking to stakeholders to ensure that it's still something that they want to continue progressing, and we'll continue to test quite strongly of, are these engagements being effective, or are they distracting people from what is more important for them to be focusing on right now? And are they able to participate effectively? So you'll be hearing that. You'll likely be you'll be receiving a survey from us after this engagement, and we're interested in that feedback of if there's things going on for your company or your aspect of the industry that you want to highlight to us so that we can understand what we should be moving forward faster or slowing down or pausing. We're interested in hearing that, really with the focus of making sure that we maintain a stable investable market that has cost competitiveness over both the short and the long term, but also recognize that there were initiatives that we're moving forward that we think we can continue to progress at a measured pace. So if we could switch to just the next slide, Jen. I do want to highlight for everybody that we will be doing a recording, or we will be releasing a recording of this session on our webpage. And through that, through the recording, we will be gathering some personal information, and under the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act, if you have any concerns with that, your information being released, you can be in touch with us. And switching to the next slide, Jen. I think everyone's quite well aware of who the ISO is and what our role is. And in the next slide, I think just reiterating, in the next slide, Jen, I'll just reiterate that ISO's key focus right now is really on the safety of our staff, our stakeholders and maintaining reliability during this time. And then that's shortly, quickly followed by ensuring market stability and cost competitiveness or cost considerations at this time. And next slide, Jen. And I touched on this a little bit as well, but the ISO, as many of you are aware, we released a stakeholder engagement framework in late 2019 that was very much focused on us improving how we engage with stakeholders to ensure that we're meeting your needs and interests in a consistent, transparent, and meaningful way. And as we've gone through all the changes that the pandemic have placed on us, we are looking to ensure that that continues to be the case, that we're consistent, transparent, and meaningful. And so meaningful maybe takes on a whole new meaning here. So we do want to continue progress in these challenging times where we can, but not, as I said, create any unnecessary concern or urgency where it's not warranted. So we do look for your continued feedback on that. But at the same time, we many of us are working from home and continue to progress some of these things to continue that progression and kind of effectiveness of the industry, we are moving pieces forward. Maybe on the one touching on the technology point, this is our second Zoom webinar that we've held. The first one was a couple weeks ago for the pricing framework. Jen is going to talk through the how we're managing the questions and Q&A portion. But you will, for those of you that were involved in our first session, you'll note that we aren't locking the session this time around. There's been some added security features on the back end that allowed us to eliminate that added piece. But we do recognize that there are still many companies or parties that have concerns with the security of Zoom. This session that we're holding right now today is a very public facing session. Anything that we will be talking about, we will be releasing in the audio recording. So something we are making public, but we are interested in hearing if there are still remaining concerns from parties around using Zoom. For those of you that follow the stakeholder newsletter, we put out a request on Tuesday for feedback or input on people's concerns with the security of Zoom, but also indicated what the alternative options would be where we have evaluated tools available, and Zoom was the top choice for us when we did that evaluation. And if we go away from using it, I think we'll be going back to the previous tool that we used, the GoToMeeting kind of one-way format, as well as comment matrices. And so for those of you that maybe support the continued use of Zoom, or we'd also be interested in hearing from you. So I think that just highlights that we are very focused on ensuring that our engagements are effective, but we're recognizing that the circumstances are almost changing on a daily basis, and we'll continue to adapt and look for your feedback in how and when we should be adapting. So before I kick it over, I'm just going to introduce our panelists. And seems like we might be one panelist short today then.
No, I think I'm here now.
Okay, great.
That's who you're referring to?
Yeah. So great. Murray, Murray Natishan, manager of Market Design, will be, I think, taking the first part of the presentation, and then he'll turn it over to Tan, and she'll be taking through the remainder of the content. And Tan is the senior market design analyst on the market design team. But just before I turn it over to Murray and Tan, I'll introduce Jen Vollmer and Carla Anderson. They're our communication advisors. Jen will talk us through how we're going to run the Q&A portions of the session, and then both Jen and Carla will be leading us through that when we get to those portions of the agenda. So thanks, and over to you, Jen.
Thanks, Nicole. Hi, everyone. So if you've joined us for the second Zoom, you might have had an opportunity to ask questions over the Q&A or the audio questions last time, but I'll go over that briefly. So at the bottom of your screen, you should have the options to raise your virtual hand. And obviously that for us would be the preferred mechanism for asking a question. If you raise your hand during the designated question times or earlier, once we get to that question period, one of us, Carla or myself, will come over and we will unmute you so that you're able to ask your audio question to our panelists. And then once your question is complete, we'll put you back on mute again. The alternative for asking questions is to submit a written question into the Q&A box, which is at the bottom of your screen as well. And once you've submitted that question, everyone can see it. So other attendees, if you would like to go in there, and you can also upvote questions that you have a similar interest in. And it ranks those questions, so it'll put the question at the top with the most votes for it. So we'll also be reading out those questions during the Q&A period. We have two sections for Q&A, and those are segmented into the presentation. So those will be coming up. We have about a half hour of that. For folks that are calling in on the phone, if you would like to ask a question, feel free to email stakeholderrelations@iso.ca. And we'll be checking that inbox as well, and we can read your questions out loud that way. And likewise, if you have a question that comes up after the session that you think of, feel free to send an email to that inbox as well. Nicole mentioned that we're posting the audio and video, and that should be going up next week. The comment matrix has been posted for the session today, and that's available on the sub-hourly page. And I think that's about it. If you have any other questions, send it into stakeholder relations and we'll get back to you right away. And with that, I think we are ready to hand over to Murray for the
great. Yep. Thank you, Carla. Yeah. Carla, are there other phone attendees today?
Yes, there are.
Okay, so we'll do a page number shout out on the as we run through the session to make sure that we can keep the people on the phone targeted with where we're at. So if we can move on to slide number 6, please, the agenda slide. Yeah, so as Nicole mentioned, Tan and I are going to run through the information today. This is our second session for the sub-hourly settlement. I'm going to review the stakeholder feedback that we received after the last meeting. Tan is then going to talk about some of the interval alternatives that we looked at as far as implementation alternatives for the sub-hourly settlement. We'll field some questions about halfway through, so somewhere around 10:30 we'll field some questions and take a short break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about participation options and some additional considerations for the sub-hourly settlement, and then have a closing question session right before the end of the session. So if we could move on to slide number 8 then, please. So we did receive a lot of good feedback from the stakeholders, and we want to review that with you right now. Before we do so, I thought it would be good to review the objectives of this engagement process that we are running for sub-hourly settlement, and we do want to, the purpose of it really is to determine if there's value in moving to a shorter settlement interval, and if there is, what's the appropriate interval to that we should move forward with. And we need a lot of input from stakeholders in order to make that decision. We do need to understand the costs and the financial impact to load and generators. We can estimate the ISO's costs. We do need some help from stakeholders to understand the timing transition. We did get a number of comments related to that in our stakeholder feedback, and that's caused us to adjust some of our plans, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. And one of the primary goals, and I didn't cover this in the first sub-bullet, really was to ensure that we can explore the enhancements to price fidelity and the ability for resources to be flexible in the market through the sub-hourly settlement initiative. So why don't we move on to slide number 9. And the ISO received a number of comments on the consultation approach, and we'll review those. We had both support and concern about the initiative, and I'd like to review some of the comments about that. There were comments about the scope, and there were comments about the implementation options and the impacts and the timing. So good comments that we'll review over the next few slides. So if we could move to slide 10, and the comments that we received related to the consultation approach is, there were primarily more comments around the timing, and the timing was considered to be rushed, that the ISO, the time frame that the ISO had originally published was considered to be rushed by a number of participants, probably less so from the generators or from the loads that are currently on interval meters, but more so by the load serving agents and people that would have to deal with the settlement of the that would be having to deal with the settlement of the system. So there was a lot of comments related to that, and you can see in that final bullet on this slide that the cost estimates, in addition to the timing, there was a wide variation in the timing estimates, and it really again relates to the type of stakeholder that was providing responses to us, where people with interval meters were generally on the shorter end of the time frame, and people that or participants that may deal with the load settlement and things like that were definitely on the longer end of the time frame. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in some of the upcoming slides as well. There were some comments that we received about stakeholders wishing to have more of a facilitated type of discussion. That certainly was our intent, to hold more kind of, the vision was to get together as a group and then break out halfway through each of the sessions into smaller group discussions. We think that there's the opportunity for some better exchange of information when we have those types of engagement formats. But given our current social distancing requirements, that just wasn't possible. And so we are using Zoom. This is the second stakeholder engagement process that we are using Zoom for. And the first session, we held a pricing session 2 weeks ago that went very smoothly. And we have had, a number of dry runs within the ISO to test the product. We just didn't quite feel comfortable that breaking into using the Zoom feature where you can break into smaller groups and kind of have these facilitated discussions. We just didn't feel comfortable with the technology at this point yet to be able to do that. And, if we can get more comfortable with the technology, we will, we may endeavor to do that, but right now we're not at that point. On that facilitated discussion point, we will talk later in the presentation today as well about some smaller group discussions with companies that we would like to get some better cost and timing information on, and so stay tuned for that. There were also some kind of direct verbal comments that were provided to us in the last stakeholder session, and then a number of comments in the written feedback we received after the first session that options for implementation should be explored before the cost estimates were provided. And we went away after that session and considered that, and we did agree with the stakeholders that you could see the points why that would be a good way to do the engagement process. So we have made a change, and today we will be talking about the options. One of our intentions through today is to narrow the number of options down to allow for cost estimation to be done on fewer alternatives to help progress our decision making with this initiative a little bit quicker, and also to put a bit less burden on people that will be providing cost estimates to us. So Tan, if we could move on to slide number 11 now. And we did receive the next two slides. We'll talk about stakeholder comments that either supported or were kind of had concerns about the initiative, the stakeholder comments for support, there was some recognition that that a shorter settlement interval may improve price fidelity and incentive flexibility, and that there was agreement that those are good enhancements to the energy-only market framework that we have. Some respondents were suggesting that as a result of the shorter settlement interval implementation, there may be more investment in storage or assets that may be able to actually provide some additional flexibility to the system. There were a lot of comments related to improved load participation or improved incentives for load to be able to participate in the market. And that last bullet really is kind of a summary of the previous bullet. So if we could move on to slide number 12, please. And while there were stakeholders that were supportive of the initiative, there were some concerns that were raised, of course, as well. There were many comments related to the current economic environment that we're in, not only the economic environment, but the kind of the work and social environment that we're in. And is this initiative really important to be dealing with right now, given the tight fiscal conditions that we have, and also focus for a lot of market participants, maybe more so on ensuring day-to-day operations are being met. There was concern that this may be a non-essential change. We do think that this is an important element of the market, and if we can address this this initiative and make some resolution, we can either move forward with it, or we can put it on the sidelines and focus on things that may be kind of the next step of market evolution for the ISO and for market participants. We did have concerns from some members of the renewable generation community that they were concerned that there could be some negative revenue implications with moving to a shorter settlement compared to the hourly settlement. Pan is going to talk to our work on that later in the session, and we can take questions or take comments on that during one of the comment or question periods. There was also an issue that was raised that maybe the problem wasn't well defined. It seemed like it was a solution looking for a problem. And we do think that we've defined the problem in that we're exploring whether there is improvements in the price fidelity or improvements in flexibility that can be made through this initiative. We did have some examples in session one. And we did receive comments that they were highly stylized, and I think that was the intent of the examples, was to really present the price fidelity issues and the current market design at a high level to allow everybody to understand those issues. And we did present those so that everybody has an understanding of what some of the price fidelity weaknesses of the current design may be. And we are going through this initiative to try to address that if we can get to the point where we believe that the economics support the change. So Tan, I'd like to move ahead to slide 13, the scope from session one slide, please. And we received some comments on the scope, and I thought before we got into those comments, it would be good to review the scope that we had put forward in session one. So in scope was to confirm the opportunities that could be achieved through this initiative and ensure that the problem definition was accurate. We want to review the benefits and costs of moving to a sub-hourly settlement and understand how it will incent flexibility, increase price fidelity. We want to understand the impacts to the operating reserve and markets and the energy offers. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. Tan will address that in the first half of our session today. We do want to develop and assess sub-hourly settlement options, and Tan will be taking a look at those and going through that both from an implementation and from a participation standpoint this morning. And we do want to identify potential rule changes that could be required if this initiative was to move forward, and we'll start doing that in the second half of the session as well. So if we could move forward, Tan, to slide 14, the scope slide. And the scope, we had feedback from, the feedback that we received on this initiative was extremely varied, as you may have guessed from some of the previous slides, that there were people that thought the scope should be expanded, there were stakeholders that thought the scope should be reduced, and there were stakeholders that thought the scope was just fine as it is. There was, on the expansion front, there was suggestions that there should be a session on how dispatch is done and how SMP is derived. And we may, well, we'll take that away and we'll consider whether that should be added in one of the later sessions that we may hold. There was also a suggestion that there should be an analysis on price elasticity, including an estimate of the ability of end-use customers to gain from a sub-hourly settlement. That is something that we will talk a little bit about in this session, and we will explain a bit more deeply in our third session. In this session, Tan will provide a bit of an analysis on what some of the benefits to load customers may be without a change in energy consumption. And in session three, we will perform more of a static efficiency analysis that we'll look at with a downward sloping demand curve, which is meant to with the slope demand curve, which is meant to represent kind of the increase in demand as prices decline, what the static efficiency gains from the sub-hourly settlement process may provide. And to the extent that there are some individual load customers that may want to meet with the ISO and talk about their expectations or their experiences of what they think their gains may be, we'd be happy to sit down with people and have those discussions as well. Some of the stakeholders thought that the scope should be reduced. There was concern about it reaching into the retail and tariff billing processes. And we do want to understand, I think one of the things that we wanted to achieve through this engagement process was to understand the cost and the timings related to kind of at the broadest level, quite a broad implementation of sub-hourly settlement to the extent that it did reach down to those market participants with cumulative meters. That was something that we did want to understand. We will certainly be looking at the economic implications of that and making a decision with information that we get from some of our LSA market participants after this session. And then lastly, there was people that thought there should be no change. We keep the scope as is, don't increase the scope, really stick to the sub-hourly settlement and payment to suppliers on the margin, and don't change the dispatch approach. For example, it would change fundamental, it would be a fundamental change in the market. So with that, I think that we are going to proceed largely with the scope that we have defined. We're going to ensure that we do include this scope on kind of the static efficiency gains that may be provided through the sub-hourly settlement. And Tan, with that, can we move on to slide 15, which is the implementation options slide? And again, just like on the scope, this slide talks about, the next couple of slides talk about the options for implementation around the duration of the interval, the applicability of who the sub-hourly settlement initiative should apply to. And again, the feedback that we received was quite mixed with people kind of across the spectrum on all of the issues. So on the duration of the interval, there was people suggesting no change required, others suggesting 15 minutes may be most easily implemented given that interval meters for both load and generators are currently calibrated to that approach, to that level. Others were suggesting that 5 minutes provides the best price signal for flexibility and fidelity reasons. And likewise, when it came to who the sub-hourly settlement initiative should apply to, there was varied responses. Some people think were suggesting that it should apply to all market participants. It would be most effectively applied if it was done so for all market participants. Others suggesting there could be different implementation approaches for generators and loads, that some loads could participate well, that would apply for all generators, for example, or it would apply to anybody with interval meters. There were a couple of suggestions that there should be a voluntary approach where it could apply to people either on a voluntary basis, generators or loads could opt into the initiative, or that there could be a pilot program that would be developed, which I do think is similar to the voluntary kind of opting in approach. A pilot program could be developed that would allow the ISO in the market to kind of test the system out or test the initiative out with a subset of people that would choose to participate. And if we could move on to slide number 16, please. There was also suggestions that there should be, that there could be maybe rather than a sub-hourly settlement implementation, there could be the equivalent of a payment for suppliers on the margin for load. I think this is something that we would more take away and consider after we have made a decision on this initiative, if this was something that we required to do or not. And then there were also suggestions around developing other products to incent flexibility, whether a ramp product could be introduced or whether there could be AS products that were that could be designed specifically to attract load and peaking generation. And my thoughts related to this is that, and we're going to see a question somewhere around how this initiative interacts with the flexibility framework. And this initiative really is part of the flexibility framework in that, you know, there was a number of other initiatives that were also part of the flexibility framework. There was the storage integration. There was the net demand variability studies, which are going to be released mid-year. The review of the pricing framework was part of the flexibility framework, as was this initiative. And then later in the year, the dispatch tolerance and the ramp table. I think on products that are directly related to flexibility, we would be looking at the results from the net demand variability study and understanding what the system needs for those specific products may be. And the approach would be to understand what the problems that we are expected to be seeing in the future from the net demand variability study, understand what the cause of those problems are, and then develop solutions to those problems. I think that's the approach that we would use in relation to a ramp product, for example, or for an AS product specifically for load or peaking generation. So if we could move, Tan, on to slide number 17, please. And stakeholders had concerns and comments around the general impacts of the initiative. We had the ISO in our last session and in our comment matrix. You know, we had anticipated that there would be impacts to market participant meterings and to the IT systems and the data storage systems. And we had this broad other category that we assumed there would be some human resource costs, but we did receive some good feedback from stakeholders related to what would be in that other category and what the timing requirement for changes in that other category would be. There would be certainly implications to both like financial contracts for sure, and likely physical contracts that may be in place between market participants. There would need to be renegotiation of those contracts that would take time to complete. There would be there was suggestions there would be implications for the RRO. There was a cautionary note that we should be aware of the changes in Measurement Canada standards. We need to ensure that we're aligned with those. And I can let you know that we are, and I think Tan mentioned that we are in the last session as well. And for sure, there would be costs associated to this with all of the stakeholders, including the ISO, even from the smallest changes to the larger changes that we're considering. And then, Tan, if we can move on to 18, and this is the last slide for me. There were comments related to the timing of the implementation. So the previous slide that I reviewed were comments related to the kind of the cost estimates And I think we had seen at the outside that it would take 12 months, up to 12 months, to provide cost estimates, depending on the nature and the extent of the changes provided. To actually put into effect a shorter settlement interval, again, there were wide comments related to the timing that it would take to actually implement the initiative. And again, the timing was on the short end, probably most reflective of entities that have interval meters set up and for the time period that would needed to be taken to implement a 15-minute settlement interval. You can see that the shortest duration there is 3 months, and it could be up to 10 years. And the comment related to 10 years reflected market stakeholders, load settlement agents that may have to change out, to the extent the initiative went this far, to change out the cumulative meters for all of the customers in their areas. That would take a significant amount of time and may need to be staged to allow for the replacement of those meters when the meters were actually up for recalibration or for replacement. IT system upgrades could take anywhere from 4 to 36 months. Again, the breadth of the duration based on the kind of the type of implementation of the initiative that would be occurring. There would be data storage requirements and changes to that could take up to 2 years. And again, the contract renegotiations that I did mention on the previous slide, the time to provide, the time needed to maybe do some renegotiations could be up to 18 months of time for some of the market participants. So we can take questions on this. We can take questions on the next bit of information that Pan's going to be providing in about, let's say, half an hour or 45 minutes time, and then we'll do a quick break. But with that, I'm going to turn it over to Pan, and she's going to run through some of the implementation options for you.
Hi, everyone. So I'm just going to, like Mary said, I'm going to run through the implementation options. So I'll be on slide 20 right now. So the ISO did hear from stakeholders that more time is required to estimate the costs, and that cost can be better estimated when options are better understood. So that's why we're going through the options phase here first. And we also wanted to, as Mary mentioned earlier, to narrow down some of the options so that you can provide your cost estimates, and that it'll hopefully reduce the time associated and the effort associated with those cost estimates. So this section will be exploring the offers and settlement intervals, the dispatch and settlement interval, the duration of the sub-hourly interval, and participation approaches. And for the participation approaches, we'll look at generators, loads, and interties, and how they can participate and the options for that. I will skip ahead to slide 22, which is the offers and settlement intervals. So currently the offers are submitted on an hourly basis, but restatements can occur at any time for an acceptable operational reason. So we looked at the question of, do we need to align the offers with the settlement interval? So we looked at both pros and cons. So the points for, or it provides a better alignment of offer over with the payment to be received. And then the points against it is, right now, asset operational status doesn't actually change with the offer interval. And this actually holds true with any current hourly interval that we have right now. And then we also may introduce unnecessary system changes, because changing the offers itself would require a lot more implementation complexity than just the settlement interval itself. I'm going to go to slide 23 now. Sorry, seems like my volume's a little bit low, but I'm not too sure how to increase that. The dispatch and settlement interval, the current dispatch practices right now are that we dispatch supply on an as-needed basis, and we also dispatch to ensure system flexibility needs are met. So the question we looked at was, does dispatch need to align with the settlement interval? So points four, it better aligns generated payment with the delivery of energy. Points against is we may need to introduce a very short settlement interval to allow for the dispatch to meet the system balancing needs. And last, the settlement interval actually perfectly aligns with the dispatch interval. There could still be efficiency loss, which may occur because it's still a mismatch between settlement and dispatch. So we'll have to take a look at that. And also the argument for changing current practices is not very strong. Past practices have met system needs. So past net demands variability studies have indicated this approach will meet future needs. Also, what we've seen also with dispatch and alignments and also offers and alignments is that in other jurisdictions, they are not necessarily completely aligned either. I'm just going to jump ahead now to the duration of the sub-hourly interval. So I'll be on slide 25. So for this, we looked at the duration of the interval options. So currently, the following intervals are used. So all interval meters capture data on a 15-minute basis. Most interval meters can be reconfigured to capture shorter than 15-minute intervals. And also loads on accumulative meters are profiled on an hourly basis. So those are the different intervals that are currently in the market today. So we looked at options for the durations of the interval, keeping this in mind. So one was to continue to settle hourly. Two, settle using 15-minute intervals to better align with the interval meters. Three was to settle using 5-minute intervals. And that we've seen because other jurisdictions have actually gone down to a shorter time frame, and we thought we should explore that also. Now I'm on slide 26. I'm looking at historical price setting experience. So we thought it would be good to look historically at how often S&P has changed during an hour. So historically, our data shows that there's only been an average of 2 to 4 S&P changes each hour over the last 20 years. So this is more in alignment of the 15-minute settlement interval. So as you can see there on the chart itself, the blue is the mean changes per hour, the blue line there, and then the quartile interquartile range ranges anywhere from no change in the hour to 6. But most of the changes in the blue, as you can see there, is between 2 and 4 S&P changes. Now for slide 27, we looked at the interval duration analysis methodology. So we wanted to quantify the impact of the different interval options for sub-hourly settlements on generators and price-responsive loads. This was important to us because we wanted to know with the revenue and cost differences between the different settlement intervals, that would provide an insight for us for what the gains from price fidelity would be. So basically the better alignment between consumption and production at that time. So the bigger the difference, there would be more of a gain. The smaller difference, there would be less of a gain in price fidelity. So to do this, we tested the revenue impacts for settlements at the hourly 15-minute and 5-minute interval. We did it for both generators and price responsive load. For the data that we used, we did an analysis using the historical data. So we looked at generation, we used price responsive load and S&P for the last 5 years. And I just wanted to say that it was historical generation production and price responsive load consumption. We didn't make any changes in what the behavior would be there. For the production volumes, we used SCADA data for most of the assets in order to get 5-minute granularity. And for other assets, only 15 minutes data could be used. The reason for that is because of the net to grid differences. For some of the cogens and some other units, there was some differences in between those numbers. And so they report gross and we only had gross and we didn't want to have those numbers confused between those two. So the methodology, so we determined the set of, I'm on slide 28, apologies for that. Methodology, we determined the settlement interval prices for hourly, 15 minutes and 5 minutes. So for each of the different settlement interval, we determined the production consumption of each asset. And when I say we determined the production consumption of each asset, I meant that that's the historical consumption within that time frame. We didn't make any changes to the production or consumption of any of these assets. Then third, we looked at the revenue or charge that was determined, and we just multiplied that by the relevant pool price with the production or consumption in the interval. So some of the assumptions we made. So the 5 minute interval calculation was done only for a subset of the assets, where the SCADA data was a good estimate of the net to grid generation. Number two, we assumed the shortening settlement interval had no impact on offers, behaviors or asset operations. And I know that there were some questions regarding that, that offer behavior could change. And so thus, there would be more changes or impacts to our study or our analysis. And we're more than happy to sit down with market participants to discuss what their offer behaviors are. But at this point in time, we assumed that there was no impact on it. And then number three, we did not take into account any uplift into revenues for generators. I've moved on to slide 30. Slide 30 actually speaks about the generator revenues, and we're looking at it from a 15-minute interval. We looked at all the assets on the CSD page. And the first part of the chart speaks about the hourly revenue. So what each of these generators would have received in the 15-minute interval. We actually aggregated all the assets into different technology to keep privacy concerns. So if you take a look at the bottom part of the chart, it's the percentage change in going from hourly to 15-minute intervals. We looked at it from 2015 to 2019. If you take a look at the changes, it's anywhere between a 0.02% to a 0.04% increase in revenue. Okay, I'm shifting over to slide.
Pan.
Yeah.
Pan, it's Murray. For me, anyways, I think your key message got a little bit garbled on that last slide. Could you go back and maybe just I'm not sure if others had the same issue, but maybe could you go back and repeat the key message on slide 30?
Okay. Sorry. The percentage change going from the hourly to the 15-minute was pretty minimal. We saw anywhere from like a 0.02% change to a 0.04% change in 2019. Most generators did get an increase in revenues. However, with wind, because at this time they're not as price responsive, nor do they put in the offers and bids. So that's why there isn't any incentive for them to respond.
Hey, Marie, do you want to jump in on this one?
I will. One. Yes. Okay, trying to stakeholders here. We do have some issues. I'll try to finish off maybe this slide and the following slide, and we'll maybe have Pan jump back in on slide 32. But slide 30, the key message here is we did go through and we looked at generator revenues on an hourly basis and compared those to what we would have seen historically, as Tan had mentioned, without any change in behavior. If we had then settled them against the 15-minute price, the 15-minute price was established through averaging the S&Ps that we had seen historically over a 15-minute period. And we did find that there were largely pretty small and immaterial changes in overall revenue for generators. generally those assets that can respond to price would have a slightly higher revenue increase, but again, the increases were quite minor. Those assets that just in the past have not had an incentive to respond to price would have a slightly lower overall revenue take over the previous 5 years. And if we could move on to slide 31. Slide 31, this is the same approach, but this is on a 5-minute basis. And as Tan was mentioning, we used SCADA data for the 5-minute intervals. And for some of the generating sites, we didn't have 5-minute data that we thought was good enough to use for this approach. So you may have noticed that in the table at the top, which reflects the hourly revenue historically for each of the generators, there are some slight differences in some of those values, and that's the reason why is that there were some sites. I do want to say that it was probably less than 10% of the sites, I think, that we didn't have the good data for, and we've done this work on a subset basis. I think that you'll see directionally that there really is not a lot of change for the direction of the revenue changes for the generators under a 15-minute basis to a 5-minute interval basis. And again, those assets that historically may have not had an incentive to respond to price are the assets that would generally would be those that would be taking a little bit fewer revenue, a little bit less revenue historically if we had a 5-minute settlement period. And then why don't we move to slide 32? And slide 32 really talks about the difference between the two. What I mean is it talks about the difference between settlement intervals for a 15-minute period versus a 5-minute period. And it does show that there are pretty minimal changes in, when we look at the historical information, in moving from a 5-minute period to a 15-minute period. There really is pretty inconsequential changes in generator revenue over that time period. The comment that is also in the call out box there is that these are broad asset category changes. There could be individual assets that may perform better or worse than that, but I think directionally the message from the previous three slides is that changes to a sub-hourly settlement process, going to 15 minutes, does cause some minor changes in generator revenue. Changes from 15 minutes to 5 minutes results in pretty inconsequential changes in revenue. And overall, there are asset types that do perform better, and there are asset types that do perform poorer under a sub-hourly settlement approach. Those changes are pretty small as well, but the assets that are able to be flexible or have historically had the incentive to be flexible generally perform better. So then, Tan, why don't you try again? Let's see if your internet connectivity is kind of resolved itself. And why don't you try slide 33?
Okay. Well, I hope you guys can hear me a little bit better right now.
Yeah, that sounds good, Tan.
Okay, but it just said my internet is unstable once again. So I'll continue, but
Murray's going to jump in.
Yeah, Murray will jump in if he needs to.
Perfect.
So we looked at the generation. So on slide 33, we looked at the generation total revenues between the for the 15-minute interval. So as you can see here, there's between 2015 and 2019, the highest percent change in total revenue is like a 0.04%. There's a revenue of about $3 billion out there. And there's about a $1.5 million change. So that's where the 0.04% revenue, total revenue would be. It is quite a minimal change in revenue increase compared to that. If you're looking at a $1.5 million, it looks like it's a big number, but in the total scheme of the whole market, it is quite a small change. Moving on to slide 34 now. The ISO identified existing price responses load, and then we evaluated their electricity costs using a 15-minute settlement interval relative to past hour bills. Overall, the cost of electricity declined, but only marginally. And I wanted to note again that the analysis does not take into consideration any changes to behavior that loads may enact within a shorter settlement interval. And we'll take a better look at that in session three, where we'll try to incorporate some of that, those changes in there. If you look down in the bottom, we did a yearly comparison for price responsive loads. There is minor changes between the cost between hourly settlement 15 and 5, but if you look at it from a percentage basis, it's practically zero. So for slide 35, I'll talk about the conclusion. So the analysis suggests that the price fidelity signals can be enhanced with a sub-hourly settlement. However, the improvements are only marginal using historical data for both the generators and the price responsive load, as you saw in the prior slides. And these amounts are undervalued, as the analysis only assumed that there were no changes in asset behaviors on the different interval scenarios. And I would say it would be logical to assume that under a sub-hourly regime, the assets would provide more of a response if they were given such, and thus the impact should be larger. Okay, continuing on to slide 36, I wanted to just reiterate some of the options again. So the duration options, the first one was the hourly interval. So we would continue to settle the energy market at an hourly interval. Points four would be no changes would be required, and this would provide the stability to the market that some market participants are looking for. Points against, it does not improve price fidelity as consumption and production of the power does not align with the price in that moment in time. And that's one of the objectives that we were looking to improve was the price fidelity. And also a point against it was that it creates or maintains a misalignment with other jurisdictions because other jurisdictions are moving towards a sub-hourly settlement, and we provided some of that information in the first session. Slide 37, we talked about the duration options for the 15-minute interval. So if we were to move to a 15-settlement interval, the points for it would be, there would be one, minimal changes for generation and load interval meters, as all the interval meters in Alberta are collecting data on a 15-minute interval right now. We also get better alignment of signal of price signals with consumption and production, because now it's a shorter time frame, and then the averaging of the hourly pool price isn't lost. The number three would be it aligns with the current tariff coincidental peak measurement. What happens with that is that now the, since they're doing it on a 15-minute basis, and if we have energy on a 15-minute basis also, it provides more of the same signal from the same time frame. The fourth one would be a better alignment with other jurisdictions as they're moving towards a sub-hourly settlement. Another point four also is it aligns with historical data showing the S&P, because the S&P changes occur less than four times on an hour on average, and so thus this would be more aligned with it. We do recognize that the S&P changes might not happen on the quarter of the hour from our analysis prior, but this actually provides some of a good estimate of what would happen there. And then the last point four is that it provides for a market with better price flexibility signals, which aligns with the new, with more new generation loads and type that could be built in the list system later on and what we need. Points against, it requires changes to rules, system, and processes. This would be the same for any time we make any changes. regardless if it's 15 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever other changes we look at. The second point is the alignment of pricing and dispatch still is mismatched. So we still need a payment to supplier on the margin. However, this might reduce the payment to supplier on the margin by a little bit. And then the third one is if we applied it to cumulative load meters, this represents a change in the current practices. I'm going to go to slide 38 now, and I'm going to look at the 5-minute interval duration. If we were to settle the market, the energy market in that 5-minute interval, the points four are: one, it improves price fidelity as consumption and production of power more closely align with the price signal, so it gets closer and closer to real time. It enables the ISO to be able to meet future flexible resource needs, i.e. we've heard that batteries and real-time use of meters would benefit from a shorter settlement to being 5 minutes. It would be the best option for it. It will also provide better alignment with some jurisdictions because they're moving to 5-minute settlement in some jurisdictions. Some jurisdictions are on 15, so it just depends on which one you're looking at. Points against are changes to interval meters would be required to be collected on a 5-minute basis. So that definitely increases costs on meter recalibration and data storage. Because right now, as I mentioned earlier, all interval meters are on a 15-minute basis. Another point against is that minimal revenue changes, as you can see from the analysis before, between 15 minutes and 5 minutes. So we're assuming that a lot of the costs would come, there would be a lot more costs with the 5 minutes. So moving from 15 to 5 creates a lot more work, but maybe it doesn't provide that benefit that we would like to see. And then also it requires changes to rule systems and processes, same as any other changes. And then with the 5 minute, it also applies to cumulative, if this applies to cumulative load meters, it also represents a change in the current practices. Okay, so here we're going to pause for some questions. We've on slide 39, we've listed three questions that would help us with the discussion. So one, do you think, the analysis is complete? Number two, is there anything additional you believe that the ISO should be doing for that? And then number three, would you be changing your behavior to optimize the benefits of hourly settlement? And how would we quantify this benefit into our analysis? Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Jim.
Thanks, Tan. Great job. So I was going to start with anyone who wanted to ask a question, audio. If you want to raise a hand, I will come over to you and let you ask your question. I know we have a couple Q&As written out too. Perfect. We have Colin Robb here. You're unmuted. If you can unmute on your side as well, you'll be able to ask your question.
Hey there, thank you. Just a quick question going back to slides 30, 31, and looking specifically at some of those cogen numbers, for example, in 2015, going from a 15-minute interval, cogen revenues are $324 million. Under a 5-minute interval, they are reduced to $90 million. Is that difference entirely a result of that SCADA reference that's being made, or can you just comment on what's changing between those two scenarios to have that drop?
Yeah, so it's 10 speaking, sorry. So between the two, you can't actually compare a direct comparison between the 15-minute and the 5-minute data because the 5-minute is purely a subset of the 15. And yes, the big changes, wherever you see the changes between the hourly revenue, they should be the same for both, but if there's a change in that, that's because we only could have a subset of that information. And so that's why there's the big difference in number.
Does that answer your question, Colin?
Yeah, I think so. I guess what would be helpful then is to see that same subset in that 15-minute interval data for the cogen and possibly simple cycle as well. And maybe just one follow-up then. With respect to the coal numbers, for example, we don't see any changes in those numbers from a 15-minute to a 5-minute. I would have, in my mind, I would have thought, you know, some of those upper coal blocks would have been marginal units through those years. And so some of those changes I would have expected seeing show up in the coal revenues. Is, am I missing something there, or was there just
okay, non-defined? So let me, oh yeah, so sorry, Colin. So let me explain it a little bit better. So it's actually hourly revenue that you're actually seeing from the top, right? So it's actually the hourly revenue dollars. It's not the hourly revenue. It's not the 15-minute revenue dollars that you're actually seeing in the chart up top, or the 5-minute revenue dollars. So that's why it stays the same. And then if you take the percentage change going from hourly to 5-minute, you can work that backwards to see what the actual change in revenue would be for the 5-minute or the 15-minute. Does that answer your question?
I'll need to take a look maybe and just work through these numbers again. Thank you, though.
Okay.
Yeah, and we can follow up with you after if needed, too.
Right on. Thanks.
Thanks, Colin. Okay, we have one more hand raised here. Akira, I've unmuted you, so if you want to go ahead and ask your question. Do you have a request on your end to unmute? Akira?
Sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Sorry. Is it possible, it's almost a follow-on question to what Colin had just asked, but we're doing our own analysis and we're not finding the numbers look anything like the ISOs. We use CSD page data, and that might be a difference in data sources, but it would be really helpful for us not to just see that percentage change and then be expected to actually multiply that to find the hourly revenue data, but get the actual volume and the price number that you've got. That is, so we can do the comparisons of hourly revenue and then the 5-minute interval revenue that you've got, and then also the same for the 15-minute interval data. I think there's some big differences in the conclusions that are we can glean from the changes and what the conclusions you're showing in your analysis are. We just like to kind of come back and find out where the analysis is maybe driving to, if it's a result of different data sources and otherwise generally explainable, or if there are some fundamental differences that lead to these different conclusions.
Can I take that back to my analytics people and then I'll get back to you? I think we could do something like that, but I just wanted to make sure that whatever we're presenting is correct. So let me just get back to you on that. Is that right, Akira?
Yeah, no, it totally is. And that's primarily it is. A lot of the conclusions about the efficiency benefits and what's going to happen for the units are really predicated on what this analysis is showing. And we don't get even close to these numbers.
Okay. And then I would really be like, I think it would also be helpful for us to sit down also once we, depending on what we can provide and what you can provide, and compare some of the analysis, because like you said, it could be data differences or it could be fundamental assumptions also, right?
Sure. And like I said, just full disclosure, but we do use the information that you, the ISO has on its CSD page to try and do that. So maybe it is a difference in data sources. And so that's one thing that we wanted to be able to compare and contrast, whether it's something about the CSD information that's very different than the SCADA information. I would assume that it's the same, but that might not be true. And like you've actually identified in this one, you don't have certain information at the 5-minute intervals on SCADA, but you do present it kind of minute by minute data on the CSD page. So
perfect.
Thanks.
We'll definitely follow up on that. Thank you, Akira. Let's move over to some of the written questions here. Carla, are you on the line here?
I am. Perfect. Yeah. So we've got our first questions from Steve W. And this has got a two votes for it. did you include PSM in the comparison for generators?
No, we did not. And I think that's one of the slides prior in our methodology. We, on slide 29,
Looks like Tan's cutting out a bit again. Murray, do you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, no, Steve, I don't think that we did make the adjustment for payment to suppliers on the margin for this. And Tan, if you want to try to try again, why don't you try that?
Okay, I hope you guys can hear me. Sorry about my unstable internet. So for slide 29, one of our assumptions was that we did not take into account any of the uplift payments into revenues for generators. So we didn't take into account the PSM in here. So we do realize that if we did take into account PSM, the revenues that generators receive would actually be a slightly bit lower.
Perfect. Thanks, Tan. Our next question is from Victoria B. Did you look at production savings to PRL due to not having to come down for entire hours? And this had 4 people voting for it.
So for the PRL, we did not take into consideration any behavior changes of what the price responsive load would do. So in our economic efficiency analysis in the third session, that's one of the things that we're going to try to look at is, are there any gains or any from the efficiency losses from not turning off or turning off too early or any of those that we can realize? And so we're trying to tease out those numbers. And if you think that there's a good way to do it or a good methodology to do it, or however we can incorporate that in, we'd be more than happy to sit down with you and have that discussion.
Perfect. Thanks, Tan. The next question, as I don't see any hands raised on the virtual side, Akira Y, is the SCADA data the same as a CSD data? This might have been the verbal question that we add. What specific assets did you use only 15-minute data for?
So I'll have to get back to Akira on that, but from my understanding that SCADA data and CSD page data is not the same. They won't provide the same numbers. And then with a subset of the assets that we used, I'm going to have to get back to Akira on that because I'm not too sure exactly what we can provide and what we can't, just for privacy issues. So let me get back to Akira on that once I talk to my legal people.
Perfect. Thanks, Tan. Still no virtual hand raises, so I'll continue on the Q&A. This is from Tina D. Are the results on slide 30 and 31 before or after PSM?
So we didn't take into any consideration of PSM at all. So then thus the calculations here.
Yeah, so as we mentioned with the previous question related to that, there was no reduction in PSM. We think that would reduce the values that we're showing a little bit here. And just one reminder for Carla and Jen, when people are asking questions, please ask provide both their names and the company they're speaking with. So I think Colin Rob was from EPCOR, I believe. Akira's from TransDelta. Victoria's from IPCA. And this last question, who was it from?
That was from that was Tina Delguervo. And sorry if I've mispronounced, but unfortunately I don't have an organization with the typed Q&A.
Okay, we'll ask for people when you queue your questions up if you can put your company name beside that, please.
Perfect. Perfect. Still no virtual hands, so I'll continue with the Q&A. This one's from Josh McDonald, but again, this was before we asked for organization. Question is, has there been any survey of load customer who are able and interested in modulating their load at a sub-hourly level?
Oh, I can take that. And Josh, yeah, we've received actually a lot of support from load customers that are currently billed hourly that would prefer to be billed on a sub-hourly settlement. So many of the companies represented by firms like ADC and IPCA are supportive of the initiative.
Perfect. Thanks, Murray. I'm going to still move forward. And again, if I mess up or mispronounce your first or last name, my apologies. This one is from Ed DePalazzo. And I think this is from his consulting company. Ed, sorry, I'm sure I mispronounced your last name. Question is, can you provide an impact for solar, perhaps in the last few years?
Ed, I think we can take that away. Yeah, we didn't have that on there, and we have one solar farm that would have had a year's worth of information. So leave that with us, please.
Thank you, Murray. Next question, and then this is a comment, and then we'll go back to Jen, as I see there's a hand raised. This is from Cam Hughes. More of a comment rather than a question. Stakeholders with generation having retail divisions, it will be more important that stakeholder comments be submitted with those in mind. So that was more of a comment. So Jen, I'll pass it on back to you.
Perfect, thanks. Colin, we are going to have your question. I'm just going to unmute you here.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, Colin Robb with Capital Power. I guess more of a comment or something to consider for next steps, as I think it's out of the scope for this preliminary work, is but just considering sort of how the process of offers changes. And I think one thing in particular that we would note is just the process around dispatches for OR and sort of the movements ahead of the hour to position an asset for their OR availability. I think it's something that obviously we'll have to consider, but would also be, I guess, another layer that we could add into this analysis at some point. Because I think it would be potentially material.
Okay, thank you, Colin. I may have to follow up with you to better understand it, but thanks for the comment.
Sure, thank you.
Perfect, thanks, Colin.
Any other questions? Please raise your hands before we take a break. Perfect. You guys going to take our 15 now? Does that work for everyone, right?
Yeah, and Jen, your voice is coming through extremely poor right now. So let's say, group, that we will get back together. Let's get back together on my clock. It's 10:26. Let's say that we'll get back together at 10:45, please. Thank you.
Okay. Should we start now?
Yeah, I think we can go ahead. There actually was one question that came in the Q&A. Do you guys want to respond to that before we get moving into the next section? Sure. So we have Josh with Direct Energy, and his question is, regarding those customers interested in sub-hourly settlement, what classes of customers are they? Size, type, etc. And what potential benefit do they expect to see? Trying to get at the scope of interest. Is it 1% of load or 20?
Murray?
Yeah, sure. Josh, the customers that are generally interested in the sub-hourly settlement are those with the interval meters right now, which in the last session and in this session we talked about representing, you know, quite a small number of meters. Actually, it's on 10, it's on your next slide maybe if you actually wanted to move ahead to 41. And it does represent about 65% of the total megawatt consumption in the province. So it's significant. Like, I think it's large enough that we want to make sure that we properly understand what the economic value is. The value that we described in the first half of the session was fairly minimal. We do want to, you know, with the caveat that we do know that that does not represent, you know, as the question that Victoria had asked, that does not represent any changes in behaviors that may accrue to the load consumer as a result of decreasing production when prices are high, or decreasing consumption when prices are high and increasing it when they are lower. That's something that we're hoping to do at a high level through our static efficiency analysis that we'll provide in session three. And to the extent that there are individual load customers that want to talk with us about their benefits and how they would go about calculating that, we'd be happy to do so. One of the challenges for the ISO in doing this work is, you know, unlike generators, there is a historical offer made every hour. There isn't the same thing for load. So it's, you know, we can generally observe the prices where load is coming off, but to do a backward-looking analysis and assess what we think the changes in production might have been based on observations that where we do see behavior changing from week to week or month to month, I think that it wouldn't be a very robust analysis, and we're looking at different ways of providing that value. Hope that helps, Josh. Why don't we continue, Tam? Okay, well, I'll start, Tan, because your mic was quite poor.
So, and was that?
Yeah, Jen, if you can just let us know, Jen, when you do get Tan's phone ready to be able to participate, that would be good. Perfect. Okay, so what we want to do in this next half group is we do want to take a look at participation options, and we're going to start off by talking about generation participation options. Got a couple of slides on that. We're going to talk about load participation options, and then we're going to try to pull all this information together in some summary slides. And this wasn't really the plan that we were going to be working with today, where I would provide the commentary on these slides, so bear with me if I stumble a little bit. But on slide 41, I hope that that's the slide that we're on now. I think this generally says what I've just talked about, that we'll review at a high level generation participation options, and there really will be two that we look at. And we'll look at a few different load participation options. One of the things that we want to do is we want to talk about, there was a good comment or question brought up in our last session about, to the extent that some loads participate in sub-hourly settlement process and others do not, there would be a concern around a revenue mismatch between amounts paid to generators and amounts collected for load. So we're going to review that. We've done some work on that. But maybe if we could proceed on to slide 42, please. So the first option for generators that we would like to look at is that all generators should participate in a shorter settlement interval. We think there are points that support this alternative, in that this would better align the payment for generation with the performance of the generating unit. We know that dispatch generators, to the extent that price is lower than their dispatch price, there is a payment for supplier on the margin that keeps them whole. We did see a stylized example in the last session, though. However, if generators do go offline in an early part of the hour, they could actually benefit from higher prices that would result from that offline. So we think that is a better alignment of payment and generation is one of the good elements. And then it would help, but it probably wouldn't completely reduce the need for payment for suppliers on the margin. If there was a 15-minute settlement interval, that would probably likely continue. Shorter duration intervals could do away with the requirement for a payment for supplier on the margin. there is points against this one as well, right? So changes for generators, you know, really might not be required because of those payment for supplier on the margin. They are kept whole for their generation dispatches regardless of pool prices. And then the final point against that one is that, right, it does result in some minor reallocation of revenues amongst generators. We had gone through those slides in the first half that were showing that generation assets that did not have an incentive to change consumption with the price were impacted negatively with moving to a sub-hourly settlement if there was mandatory participation for all of those generators. Jen, because I can't see the slides, can you just let me know if we move on to slide 43 that visually we're still, I'm talking to the right slide?
Yes, keep going.
Okay, here. So we're on slide 43 then. This is the second option we looked at for generators, and this was a voluntary opt-in for all generators in the sub-hourly settlement initiative. And one of the points for this is that it would allow generators to better manage their costs associated with the transition to a sub-hourly settlement initiative. We do think there are probably more points against this option than for it, in that it would increase the settlement process it would increase the complexity of the settlement process quite materially. There would need to be a number of kind of after the fact or kind of changes to what now is quite an automated settlement process to be able to put generators into the participation in sub-hourly settlement to ensure that we had the right generators that were not participating in sub-hourly settlement, and to the extent that there was any changes in participation from a month-to-month basis, it just increases the complexity even more. The other thing we believe is a point against this option is that the price fidelity gains that we're hoping to get would be reduced, in that the payment to suppliers on the margin would continue to be needed to be made, and we just wouldn't have the best kind of price paid for generation delivered outcome under this scenario. So I'm going to step into the load participation options here. And I'm going to move on to slide 44 and to provide a bit of context for these slides. This is the work that we've done to address that question that was brought up in session one around the revenue and the cost mismatch. And one of the that's what the concern here speaks to, that a true up adjustment may be needed to bridge the gap. We said that we would do some work to understand the magnitude of that true up amount. And that's what we've done on the following slide. So the first option was that all interval metered loads and cumulative loads would be settled on a 15-minute settlement basis. And then option two, that option one wouldn't result in the problem. We've got everybody settling on assumed 15-minute shorter settlement interval. Option two is where this mismatch happens, where you've got interval metered loads would be settling on the shorter duration interval. Cumulative meter loads would be settling on an hourly settlement basis, and we're going to walk through this analysis on the next slide. Maybe before I do, I'll just check in with you, Jen. Is Tan's phone, have you been able to get her connected?
Not yet, Marie. If you can just go for another slide. I don't see her on the list yet.
Okay, well, I'll continue. And
Marie, and I think she may be on. She just, her number may be blocked. We'll just try this one moment. And if you can unmute.
Yeah, just, sorry. That's my feedback. Okay. Can you guys hear me?
Dan,
we can hear you,
Dan.
Fine, Tan.
Okay, and perfect.
You want to take us on 45?
Yes.
Okay.
On 45, yeah, that'd be great. Yes, so we looked at the load true up adjustment analysis, like Marie said. So for the data that we use the 2019 settlement data, And then we also use the daily interval meter data that's sent in by the load settlement agent and the meter data manager. And the reason why we needed to do that was that the daily interval meter data actually has the interval meter information on it. And then the 2019 settlement data is actually an aggregation of both the interval and the cumulative meters. So with both of those information, that we could actually use that to then determine the interval and the cumulative meter and the separation of those two. So with the methodology, we determined the settlement interval for the hourly and the 15 minutes. The reason why we only did 15-minute analysis, once again, is because we only had 15-minute data. Settlement data doesn't come in 5-minute increments, and so thus we were limited to the 15-minute interval. So for each of the different intervals, we also determine the consumption in each LSA area. Once again, it is just purely what the consumption was. We didn't make any assumptions to any of the changes there in behavior. If there was a difference in settlement interval and responses to that. The cumulative meter data was then shaped using the DIM information. So whatever the profile in the DIM was, that's the profile we put on top of the cumulative meter data. The energy charge was then determined by multiplying the pool price in the interval with the consumption in the interval. And then the difference was determined taking the amount collected in one option versus another. On to slide 46 now. So then there were a couple of notes of cautions for the adjustment. So we assumed, once again, that shortening the settlement interval had no impact on offer behavior of generation or load consumption. So we just purely took whatever the load consumption was and whatever the pool price was, and then those were what we would be using historical data on. The calculation are an aggregate of all of the retailers in the zone. So thus, individual retailers may actually see a larger adjustment as all the information we have is netted at the zone level. I'm going to move now on to the results, so which is on slide 47. So we did the five biggest LSA regions that we saw. On scenario one, everything was settled on a 15-minute basis. Scenario two was a partial settlement on the 15-minute basis. So the partial was the interval meter data with all 15. Anybody who was on cumulative meter was still settled hourly. And then we looked at the difference between the two, and then just a pure subtraction, and then you got the percentage from that. So if you look at the bottom, the difference is $163,000. And then if you look, and that's out of like $3.2 billion worth of costs, so that only becomes a 0.01% difference. So the true-up adjustments are really minor. And of course, the true-up adjustments will also impact really the people who are still on hourly settlement. And all I can say is that it's quite a small number compared to the large amount of costs that you're seeing. So now I'm just going to go through the summary of the different options that we looked at. So for one, we looked at settling all loads on a sub-hourly basis. I'm on slide 48. So one is the points four are to enable all loads to become price responsive. Another point four is settling everybody on a sub-hourly basis is all loads are charged the same price, and that there would be no true-up adjustments needed at all, which helps with the complexity of the settlement system. Another one is interval change is actually a simple concept, like going from hourly to 15 to 5, whichever options that are chosen, versus other really more complex options, which we've explored later, which is like the hybrid option or like a voluntary. So it's relatively easy to understand when you do the what the change should be. Implementation, once again, is maybe a little bit more complex. So points against, the same, this is going to hold true for all of the points against for the AUC settlement code changes. That's going to happen regardless if we change from 15 to 5, because anytime there's an interval change, we're going to have to change the AUC settlement code. Another point against is the settlement process can be more complicated. So now if we're assuming that everybody's going to have to be settled sub hourly, cumulative sites would have to either change into a interval meter, or else they would have to be profiled on a sub hourly interval instead of an hourly interval. So thus, this will add a little bit more of a complication to it, and we're really interested in hearing how the LSAs and meter data manager would view this option, like a difference in profiling, a difference in cumulative meter changes over, and we're really interested in understanding the cost associated with it and the complexity associated with it. Also, another point against is not all loads are able or willing to alter consumption based on the market prices. So if we're enforcing sub-hourly settlement onto these loads and the cost associated with it, does it actually provide a benefit because they actually cannot respond to the prices anyways? I'm now going to move ahead to option two on page 49. So it is the sub-hourly for loads with interval meters. That's how they're going to be settled. And then we would settle all others on hourly, so basically the cumulative meters. So points for it would then allow loads with interval meters to have billing much better match their consumption. So in this case, price responsive loads costs would be reduced. It's also a lower cost alternative for LSAs in terms of changing meters and profiling on cumulative sites, because it would still be the same. You would send interval meters and you would send cumulative information. And we think that may be a lower cost alternative. And then another point four would be transitioning to sub-hourly settlements. So it allows for a phase-in of interval meters from cumulative meters. So it could be also seen as a transitional option. Points against, once again, it requires changes to the AUC settlement code. And another point against is also the settlement process can be more complicated, because with this, we would definitely need to have a true-up adjustment. Even though the true-up adjustment might be small, however, you would still have to come up with all the processes and the accounting systems to incorporate that. So that makes it a lot more complicated. And also the LSAs would need to provide additional metering files, because right now there's only one file that has to be sent in. And in this case, two separate files would have to be sent in. Moving ahead to option three, so slide 50, we looked at voluntary, which is allow an opt-in for loads, or as some people suggested, run a pilot program for some loads. So the points for it does allow loads with the flexibility to respond to price to benefit from the sub-hourly settlement. However, the points against, once again, AUC settlement code change, but also the settlement process would be in our opinion, the most complicated and costly in this option, because the settlement system will now have to account for the optionality. And whenever you do that, that makes it a lot more complicated. So basically, there'd be a lot of implementation questions that would arise. When can people opt in? When do they opt out? Like, what is the settlement period? How do you do all those adjustments? And a lot more other questions and that we would actually have to answer. Number two would be a true-up adjustment must be accounted for and will definitely be more complex, because now, once again, you have optionality. A subset would be allowed to be in. We don't even know for how long or what the duration period would be. And then, so how would all those adjustments be made? And then the last one is that LSAs would need to provide additional metering files. So there'd be more cumulative and interval, because now you need files for both the people who've opted in and for the people who've opted out. And then you have to keep track of who opted in, when, and where, and how. So we think that this would be the most complex settlement process if we allowed opt-in. For a pilot, if we were running a pilot program, it would still be the same because we would have to actually do a manual process. We had to settle everything, and then we'll have to do a manual process to figure out everything that would happen for opting in, opting out, and everything like that for the pilot. And so it'll create a lot more complexity is what I understand. So now I'm just going to change gears a little bit and look at the intertie option. So that's slide 51. So we were looking at the settlement, the intertie, basically it's one option, flip side of the option. So if we were to settle intertie on a sub-hourly interval with the same implementation timeline as the rest of the market. Point for this is that the implementation of sub-hourly is consistent across all assets. So at the same time, all energy settlement would be the same for all assets within the market. Points against it is that, A, if you don't have any priced intertie, importers and exporters aren't going to be able to respond to the scheduling interval anyways. And so thus, a sub-hourly interval, settling on a sub-hourly interval isn't going to be much help for these people. And another one is that price intertie initiative may require that the same rules be changed, and thus these rules may go through like a rule change process twice within a really short time frame. And so we want to eliminate that. And then third is there would be tariff changes would be required depending on the methodology or the route we take with the change. On slide 52, this is just the other side of that option, which is make changes concurrently with price intertie. So points four are the opposite of what I just said a moment ago. So which is rule changes only required once. Minimal changes in intertie schedule are expected until price intertie are implemented anyways. Points against this is energy settlement not the same for all assets, and tariff changes may be required anyways too. Okay, and then I'm going to hand it back to Murray for the summary of the options.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Yep, I'm going to step in here for a couple of slides, pass it back to Dan before our question period. But there's been a lot of alternatives and a lot of options that we've discussed here. We thought over the next couple of slides we would try to provide the ISO's guidance on what we think the most likely alternative to consider at the start would be. The idea here is to narrow the list of options down so that we can assess costs and then have a better understanding of what costs and benefits would be. So if we can move to slide 54, Tan, I'm going to start by talking about the interval considerations that we've gone through, and then I'll follow up with the participation kind of applicability. But so what we have here is we're looking at the interval for a shorter settlement period. We could stay hourly. We believe that a 15-minute change is one of the options. We could go to a 5-minute interval. And then we could do a transition from 15 to 5 minutes over some period of time. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to run through the things that we've considered against each of these different alternatives. And the items here on the left-hand side of slide 54, the items that we're considering, it's going to be the same on the following slide as well. But we do think that the current, and this shouldn't be a surprise given some of the messaging we had in session one and so far in session two, we do think that the currently hourly settlement approach does provide some fidelity and some flexibility concerns. They may be minor. There may be things that we've done to kind of get around them from the generator side, but we do think that the price fidelity may not be as strong as it could be under the hourly, current hourly settlement interval relative to a shorter period. We do think that generated flexibility. While there's the payment on suppliers on the margin, it's not quite as clean as it could be with a shorter interval, settlement interval. And we do think that there's some limits to the flexibility that loads are able to provide under the current hourly framework. There's lots of pluses with not changing anything, though. There really is no additional complexity or changes required, really, for anybody in the market at all. And the market historically has worked well and has attracted the investment when we needed it. So that's a strong point to consider. But moving into the 15-minute settlement column, we do think that there are gains to some of our key objectives as far as fidelity and price fidelity and flexibility go. We do think that moving to a 15-minute settlement interval for generators does represent a change, but it wouldn't be a significant change in that the current meter and the information provided for the meters is already on a 15-minute basis. And the next row down, the complexity of implementation for price responsive load, again, there any change would represent changes, but when you look at the 15-minute settlement period in relation to some of the other durations or options that we have, this probably represents a smaller change and would be something that wouldn't represent a huge cost for those price responsive loads. I do want to make sure that it's clear we haven't labeled it that way, but both for generators and these price responsive loads, those two categories really are meant to cover the loads that have, the market participants that have interval meters right now. We do think that moving down one road, we do think that the implementation for commercial and residential loads, now these are loads that are currently on, this is meant to indicate loads that are currently on a cumulative meter basis. We do think that's depending on the nature of the change, could be a significant change. To the extent that interval meters were required to be implemented at all of those sites, that's a significant change. And we had seen through our stakeholder feedback that we reviewed earlier today that the time required for that could be quite long, depending on what the implementation roadmap might look like. We do think the changes for the ISO and for LSAs and NDMs for the 15-minute approach, there would certainly be changes required to all of the systems and the databases and things like that, and the billing processes may represent a little bit of a smaller change than some of the other alternatives. And Jenartan, I hear just a little bit of background noise. I wonder if one of you has your phone or your link open and maybe just mute it until you have a chance to contribute again. So the 5-minute column, the 5-minute alternative, we've assessed this in a similar way as well. And again, think it provides, to the extent that 15 minutes provided good price fidelity and flexibility improvements, we think that the 5-minute would just further improve those benefits that were provided. As we move from 15 minutes to 5 minutes, we do think that the complexity for generators and for price responsive load, those market participants with interval meters, we do think that the work and the effort does increase. For those people, there would need to be a meter. While they have the interval meters, the meters would need to be recalibrated. They would need to be recertified, and this does take a certain amount of time, and we want to be aware of that. As we move to 15 minutes for 5 minutes for those cumulative meter market participants, we have a red flag for those individuals. Not only is the kind of the work required to enable those market participants to participate in the shorter settlement interval, it is a significant amount of work. And Tan had mentioned that the ability or the incentive for some of those smaller participants to participate in the price may not be that strong as well. So that also provides the red flag for that consideration. Changes here for the ISO are similar as to the 15 minutes. There would need to be changes to all our processes, but the change in the interval probably doesn't significantly represent material change other than the data base requirements for those changes. And then for LSAs and MDMs, we think again that represents even a greater change, the 5-minute interval compared to the 15-minute interval. If we were to look at an option that would transition from 15 minutes to 5 minutes, that could be a good alternative. It would capture the benefits of the 15-minute, maybe capture some of the easier to implement benefits, I mean, of the 15-minute settlement option, and over time eventually provide the signals that the improved price fidelity and flexibility signals that would get through the shorter settlement interval. So for those reasons, we've given that a green flag for the first three columns. We do think that this creates a bit of a additional complexity for generators compared to the 15 or the 5 minute interval, in that the work for the transition is probably easy at the start for the generators, as I mentioned earlier, but as that transition occurs, as that transition to the 5 minute settlement does occur, it represents work on the generator's behalf. We do think that, you know, it's a very similar process for the price response of load. We had marked them as with kind of that cautionary yellow in the 5 minute transition. You may wonder why we've moved that to a green flag in the transitional column. And we do think that the work would be the same for the for the price response of load. When that 5 minute interval transition did occur, it would represent a significant benefit, but we've actually marked that green to represent that the benefits for flexibility and for price fidelity, we believe, probably outweigh that, outweigh the costs. Again, complexity for commercial and residential loads, we are keeping that red flag for the reasons that I've talked about in the 15 and the 5 minute alternatives. And then the changes for the ISO are the same as I've previously described. And again, for the LSAs, we've kind of transitioned it from red under an immediate change to a 5 minute interval. We've transitioned the impact to more cautionary for a 15 to 5 minute interval, in that the work that would be required to implement this would be spread over a longer period of time, and it would be less disruptive as compared to an immediate change to a 5 minute settlement period. For all of the costs here, we don't really have any cost estimates in here. These are still a work in progress, and you know, as we had received the good feedback from the stakeholders after session one, we did change our approach here, and we'll be asking for kind of more robust cost estimates after we narrow down the alternatives. And one of the things that we'd like to do on this slide here, as a result of this categorization that we've done, is we'd like to ask that cost estimates proceed with the 15-minute settlement alternative. We do think that it is probably the least disruptive of the change that could be considered. And again, I don't want to indicate that the decision has been made to implement a 15-minute shorter settlement interval. It's just that it's this alternative that we'd like to best understand the costs and then make our economic case based on the costs associated with this settlement interval. So with that, and I do recognize, audience, that there could be a lot of questions related to this. Of course, we'll come back and answer any of the questions you might have on this after Tan gets through her next few slides. But with that, I'd like to move on to the participation options. And that's slide 55, please, Tan. And as we move through these alternatives on slide 55, I do want to point out in the top right corner of this table that we've now made the assumption that we're kind of evaluating these alternatives using the 15-minute settlement interval. So again, we're looking at who should be participating in the shorter settlement initiative if it was to go ahead. Should it be mandatory for all generators? That's the first column. Should it be mandatory for all loads? Should it be mandatory for those on interval meters? Or should it be voluntary for all? And I'd like to walk through our assessment of those options We do think mandatory for all generators, mandatory participation for all generators is a good approach. It would provide the price fidelity signals that were the benefits that we're hoping to, that we would hope to get out of this initiative. It promotes the right price flexibility and response from generators. We do, as we mentioned on the previous slide, we believe that while we've marked this with the green flag, we do think that the implementation complexity would be minor for generators compared to some of their alternatives. There certainly will be work that's required, but comparative to some of the other alternatives, it would be less. And changes for the ISO would be there really wouldn't be any changes required for the ISO in that scenario. For loads, moving over to mandatory for all loads, we have assigned this one a cautionary flag. Well, we certainly think that if you were to look down three rows, we think there are certainly benefits for price responsive load. Actually, it's not three rows, I'm sorry, it's five rows. There are benefits for price responsive loads with their participation in a sub-hourly settlement approach. Overall, we marked that as a cautionary flag, really for that reason that you can see further down in the table that the complexity for the commercial and residential loads is that they just may not have the incentive or really the ability to, like the smaller customers, to really be active participants in the market. So certainly some benefits for the larger customers in the market, but maybe not so much for the smaller consumers. Any change, whether it's mandatory for loads or would require some system changes for the ISO and for the LSAs, as I discussed on the previous slide. This third column here, alternative, where it's mandatory for those market participants that are on interval meters right now, we really do believe that this approach provides the best price fidelity signals, provides the best flexibility signals to the market. The level of complexity required for both the generators and the price responsive loads, we feel, as I've mentioned, there is always work with any change. We feel that for these customers, it's probably a lesser amount of work relative to some of the other market participants. And these customers are generally the ones that are going to be able to benefit from the change. We do think there is some complexity for even in this case where there is not really participation by the commercial and residential loads in this approach. There is some complexity here, as Tan has talked about the true-up mechanism and the true-up calculation that would need to be determined. We do think that there are potentially a couple of changes that would need to be worked through with this approach. One of them would be that true-up approach that Tan had described, or the other approach may be that all of those loads on cumulative meters may need to have their consumption, and now I've lost the phrase for it, their consumption kind of retuned or recalibrated to a 15-minute period. So we recognize that there is some complexity for the loads in that perspective, but also as we go down to the LSA and the MDMs, there is some complexity there as well. The only reason we've given this a cautionary flag or a red flag on the ISO's consideration is that settlement calculation, as Tan had described earlier, there is these additional complications where we do have this true-up mechanism or some maybe two sets of files that are coming in. We do think that that's manageable, but the red flag here just indicates that it is a little bit more complex than mandatory for all loads. And then the last alternative that I'd like to talk about here is this voluntary for all alternative, and it does speak to, we do think that this one probably isn't the best, doesn't provide some of the best fidelity and flexibility signals that we can. If it's voluntary for whoever chooses to participate, we may not have all generators choosing to participate. We may not have all loads that have the ability or the benefit to participate may not choose to participate, and we think that that causes some concern. The complexity for those generators or price responsive loads that do choose to participate is probably relatively minor, and those that choose not to participate, there's no change in their approach. So there's really no additional effort required on their behalf. The complexity for the commercial and residential loads, there could still be some concern here. This alternative would still see the kind of the establishment of some, let's say 15 or 5 minute, well, no, we'll say 15 minute settlement interval. So there could still be some true up requirements or some kind of load shaping or customer load shaping that would be required under this alternative. We do think that this alternative, however, represents by far the largest administrative costs for both the ASO and the LSAs, and that depending on which loads, there would always need to be some type of a kind of outside of system adjustments that are making to indicate which loads or which generators may have chosen to participate in the shorter settlement interval initiative. And to the extent that those loads or generators changed their approach from month to month or from period to period, there would need to be some manual adjustments that would need to occur through the for the settlement to be accurate. So we do think that this represents the highest impact approach as well. So just like I had said on the previous slide, that we'd like to focus our attention on the 15-minute settlement interval for cost estimates. Going forward, we would like to focus our attention here on column 3, which is the mandatory participation for all metered, interval meter generation and load approach. And we would like to work with the LSAs and all parties subsequent to the meeting to better understand the costs that are associated with that approach. So we do think now, like in response to, you know, reviewing the options first and then providing the cost elements associated with each option, we've reduced the scenarios down to two, where we would have a 15-minute settlement interval with that would apply to all interval meter generation and load. And kind of the one branch of the alternative would be that there is this true-up mechanism that Tan described. The other branch of the alternative is that there would be some kind of a reshaping of all of the cumulative meter customers into 15-minute intervals. So it's those two alternatives that we'd like to move forward with our cost estimates for, and you will see that's been reflected in our comment matrix that we'd like to get feedback from stakeholders on after the session. And again, I can expect and understand there would be questions on this. I'd like to pass it back to Tan to cover some of the other considerations over the next 6 or 7 slides or so, and then we'll open it up for questions.
Okay. Can everybody hear me now?
I can hear you fine, Tan.
Yeah, that sounds good.
A little bit of the feedback, though.
So I think you're on the website. Do you want to be on the caller side, Tan?
Yeah, can you?
Yeah, let's. Can you try it now?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so I'm going to go to slide 57. So we're just going to look at other considerations, not just the impacts to other areas of the either rules or operating reserves. And so I'm just going to go through a little bit of that. So slide 57, for operating reserves, it has come up a little bit. People have wondered how the sub-hourly settlement would be affected by operating reserves. So the currently active operating reserve prices are indexed to the hourly pool price. If we change the hourly pool price, then that might affect the OR settlement. However, I just wanted to make a note that standby reserves wouldn't be affected because they're paid as bid. So do we really have to align the OR settlement with the energy settlement? Point four is that there would be a better alignment of OR and energy opportunity costs. So then moving back and forth between those two might be a little bit easier for market participants. The points against would be there are other ways to settle OR. We could still calculate an hourly pool price using the S&P and then continue to index the OR to the hourly price. This would actually be require less of a system change, and then no AS rules or contract changes would be required to actually make this happen. Then moving on to slide 58, we looked at potential contract impacts because we heard from market participants that there could be third-party contracts. And then we looked at what type of contracts we had from the ISO side. So from an ancillary service standpoint, agreements such as transmission must run services, black start services, and load shed services, those would not be impacted because they actually don't reference any pool price or settlement interval. So those could stay the same. We also looked at the renewable electricity program. So the renewable electricity support agreement may require changes because it does reference some pool price. And I believe the intent, if we did change anything, was just to keep the contract whole and make the changes as required. For now, moving on to slide 59. We also looked at the legislation and regulations and any impacts it would have. So number one, no legislation changes are required. The definition itself for settlement interval is not defined as a 60-minute period, so that's what those changes can be made. We looked at the EUA, and it gave us guidance on load settlement, and we wanted to make sure that making changes to the settlement was within our abilities. So the ISO system operator has the duty to administer a load settlement, and it also has the ability to establish the pool price for each settlement interval for the electricity energy exchange through the power pool. So we believe that making these changes are within mandate or responsibility. Moving on to slide 60, we understand though that in the EUA, the commissioner may make rules respecting load settlement. So this segues into the next slide, which is slide 61, which is potential changes to AUC rules and impacts. So the commission has the AUC Rule 21, which is the settlement code, and that has key terms and definitions, load settlement calculations, load settlement timing, all these rules associated with loads. And so if we did do the interval changes, the Rule 21 would have to change to match those. So, and this is just, I've listed a whole bunch of potential changes, but a comprehensive list of changes will have to be developed and consulted on when a decision is determined. Moving on to slide 62, there's potential ISO rules impact. So we, from a high level, have looked at there would be key terms and definitions that would have to change. The financial settlements rules would have to change, and so would pricing. But of course, a comprehensive list of these impacted ISO rules and definition will have to be developed and consulted on when a direction is determined. There's also other interrelations with other consultations. So I've mentioned pricing on the intertie already. And there's also the metering standards and proposed new section 50210, which is the revenue metering technical and operating requirements. I believe those are going through consultations too, and we are in discussions with them to ensure that if there's a sub-hourly settlement change, that that we can coordinate those changes. Okay, so now on to slide 63. This is the question period. So we've posed three questions that we would like to get some responses from stakeholders. One, are there any other participation options that should be considered? We've identified the ones that we heard from market participants, and we've tried to incorporate those into these options, but are there any other ones that we should be incorporating or thinking of? Number two, do you have any comments on the ISO's assessment summary on duration and applicability? And number three is, are there any other impacts that should be considered? So with that, I'm going to pass it over to Jen.
Thanks, Tan. So any attendees, if you'd like to raise your hand, I'll pop by and unmute you, and you're free to ask your question. I don't see any questions in the written Q&A either. So feel free. Anything's on your mind? Okay, we've got one from Colin Robb. Can you hear us? Can you see? Perfect.
Yeah, Colin Robb with Capital Power. Maybe this was the more appropriate place for my earlier comment, but just the one additional point on OR that I would raise for the ISO to consider is just the processes around the dispatch that your system operators use, and then associated with that, just the compliance associated with OR dispatches is something that that should be looked at. If I may, maybe one other point that I would add, I think, you know, narrowing down the scope is helpful to stakeholders, particularly with respect to costs. I think what would also be helpful is to start seeing a bit of a breakdown of the ISO costs and what sort of, you know, we've got a sense of the benefits that are being modeled. But I think having that more complete cost benefit would be helpful to all stakeholders. So seeing some estimate of the ISO buckets and magnitudes would be helpful.
Sure, Rob. We've got that, and we'll bring that to the next session if that works for you.
That's great. Thank you.
Thanks, Colin. I'll mute you now on that. We have another one here from Ed DiPelzo. Ed, can you speak now? Is it working on your end?
Is it working?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, great. I just, Ed DiPelzo from DeepL Consulting, just had a question. It seems like one of the objectives of this is to promote flexibility, but in the analysis that you've completed, you haven't taken into account that people will change their offers and behaviors. So with the analysis that you completed, just with a look back with no change in behavior, it seems like you've measured something, but you really haven't created a correct measurement of what you're expecting to see from this change. And would it make more sense to look at to imagine what those effects would be and to do it on a forecast basis?
Okay, it's Tan, let me take that question. So I agree with you, Ed, in the sense that that's what we're trying to do in the third round, in the third session, in which we'll look at the economic efficiency gains from changes in behaviors in loads. We don't think that there would be that much of a change in behavior in generations because they already have, they already respond to bids. I mean, offers, they have offers in, so they do have that, a little bit of that in the system already. And so we're gonna concentrate on seeing if there's any economic efficiency from load changes and responses, and then how that changes the pool price also. So that's coming up, but if there's anything that you think that we should be looking at or in a different methodology or way that we should be looking at it or how we should incorporate into the analysis, we'll be more than happy to have a chat with you regarding that.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else on questions for audio? I don't see any coming in on Q&A. Yeah, we have Mark Thompson here. I'm just gonna unmute you. You can click on your end.
Hi, am I on now?
Yep.
Hi, it's Mark Thompson from TransCanada. At the last session, we heard from some price responsive loads who said that they would indeed respond to a 15-minute settlement. So rather than hourly, that 15-minute would be helpful. And in here, the ISO has presented a possible transition from a 15 to a 5-minute settlement. What I think would be helpful is would be to hear from the first responsive loads to see if they would respond differently to a 15-minute settlement than they would to a 5-minute. Or in other words, are they going to, does moving to a 5-minute settlement from a 15-minute settlement make any changes from a price responsive load? Are they going to respond to a 5-minute signal differently than they would to a 15-minute?
Okay, that's a great point, Mark. I think that if any of the price responsive loads want to either kind of speak to that right now, or if they would like to add comments to that in their written responses in the feedback matrix, that would be great. But I think you have a good point and appreciate it.
Thanks.
And just to add on to Murray's comments, in our comment matrix, we've actually asked, one of the questions was like, how would your behavior change? And how could we incorporate that into analysis too? So we're hoping to get some of those responses too. That'd be great.
Perfect. Carly, I think over to you on the written Q&A, if you're able to.
Perfect. Thanks, Jen. So we've got one with Tina D with Fortis, Alberta. Her question is, in regards to the summary on slide 55, did you mean that the LSAs will be expected to produce two sets of data if the 15-minute interval is only applicable to interval metered sites?
Dan, do you want to answer that one?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we would require two sets of data because we would need one for the 15-minute interval of people, and then we would still need one for the cumulative meters that would have to come in.
Perfect. Thanks, Tan. We've got a second question here from Raj. Unfortunately, Raj didn't put his company, but the question is, what would it take to incorporate the same price fidelity benefits in the ancillary services market?
Well, that's a good question, Raj. I'm not sure if I have a good answer for that right now. The ancillary service market is a bit of a different market in that it settles on a day ahead basis right now. And I don't know. I wonder, I don't feel like I've got a good response for you at this time. Tan, do you have anything that you would like
to add? So then we looked at a really high level on it, but because unless dispatching changes for ancillary services, there isn't as much of a benefit of moving to a sub-hourly settlement until the dispatches, the way that the dispatching is actually done, matches. So because it's dispatched on an hourly basis, so that's why, so there wouldn't be as much of a benefit, but that's all I can say for now from a high level.
Perfect. Thanks, Tan and Murray. So I have another question from Colette at the ADC. Does the complexity change for the voluntary option if the shortened settlement interval was only available to self-retailers?
I think the complexity is still there regardless, because we would have to take into consideration a different change in process or a manual process that we would actually have to add into a system to settle these people who are allowed to opt in. So then there would still be that complexity there. If it was, so we would have to take a look at it. But like I said, like whenever you add optionality into any process, that creates a lot more complexity.
Perfect. Thanks, Tam. Doesn't look like we've got any more Q&A here. And Jan, no virtual hands.
No, nothing on our side here. Murray, do you want to move on to next steps if we don't have any more questions?
Yeah, yes, please. So let's see. And I guess that would be slide 65. Okay, so again, thank you for your participation today. We did have a few hiccups. I hope it wasn't too obvious on your end. We did have some voice issues that we tried to remedy through the session today, and hopefully we're still able to communicate the material to you in a way that's useful for you. So we will have a session 3, and the timing of that's yet to be determined. What we would like to do is we would like to sit down with the LSAs, probably in a small group format, to better understand the costs and how to quantify the costs for the two alternatives that we have suggested that we should move forward with here. We've made mention a number of times through the session on, you know, our ability to do robust analysis on the change in behavior from loads. We're going to be able to provide some of that at a high level from a kind of a static efficiency analysis approach in session 3, but to the extent that loads would like to have discussions with us to better reflect kind of their ability to participate and kind of their assessments of what their benefits might be, that would be helpful for us as well. So I would like to point out to you again that just like every other session that we do hold, we've got a comment matrix. It was published last night. It's on our, if you were to move over to slide 66, Tan, it's on the, it's in our stakeholder relations area, current initiatives, and it's in the market efficiencies of hourly settlement, the same location you would have downloaded this presentation for. And I would imagine that in today's newsletter that we'll also have a link in the newsletter to the stakeholder matrix as well. So your response to that would be good. We do, you know, we do find the information valuable, especially when we are a bit limited in being able to have face-to-face discussions right now. So appreciate that. As many of you that can fill that in and provide your thoughts to us, and feel free to contact us in the meantime. I think that you can get a hold of us directly if you have our emails, or certainly through the stakeholder relations, the email that is on slide 67 of the presentation. They'll be able to direct your questions to us. So I think with that, I think that's it. Tan, would there be anything else you would add?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay, well, thank you everybody for your participation. Appreciate it.